Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon. Here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York, a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. She and her husband, Mike, share their home and lives with two dogs, Marcus and Ivy, six cats, Oliver, Ziggy, Annie Oakley, Homer, Sapphire, and Rosebud, two fish tanks and a pond complete with fish and frogs. When not treating her patients, she can be found on a golf course, weather permitting, or working in her garden. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. And you can also check in via social media and the web and whatnot. Here's how you can do it. You can post the comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. And you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Please provide as much info as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, if submitting a question online. And that's all the time we have for. Thanks for joining us for Vox Pop this afternoon. Actually, we have plenty of time left. And by the way, this being your first appearance, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Yes.
You're not nervous, are you?
No.
Good. It's so good to have you here. We see you during the fun drives, and it's so nice. Now, what is a Category 1, a veterinarian? That's not like a hurricane, right?
No. It basically means I am accredited as a small animal veterinarian.
Aha. Okay. So how, indeed, does one live with two dogs, six cats, two fish tanks, and a pond? This sounds like a sitcom.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunately part of being a vet. You tend to collect animals as you go along.
Well, at least they have a good home. The number to call, once again, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, you mentioned something before, as we were getting ready to open the mics, something I've never heard about and something that you wanted to talk a little bit about, and that's feline heartworm. Really?
Yes. So most people who have dogs are very familiar with canine heartworm.
Sure.
Which is a mosquito spread disease. And cats are not a typical host. Heartworms want to live in a dog. And it turns out cats actually can get heartworm. But because they're not the right host, it doesn't act the same as it does in a dog.
Hmm.
And so if a cat gets bitten by a mosquito carrying heartworm, oftentimes it can end up having a severe, almost asthmatic reaction, and can cause permanent lung damage to the cat, or it can end up with an adult heartworm living in its heart and lungs, and eventually that adult heartworm dies. And when the adult heartworm dies of old age, it often kills the cat.
Why?
Because of the reaction of the cat once the heartworm dies. Cats have a different immune system than some other critters, and they just end up with this severe, almost like an anaphylactic shock reaction.
Now, is this common in cats?
No, it's not, thank goodness. But we do see a number of asthmatic cats every year that we always say, oh, they have allergic asthma. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's heartworm. And we also have a number of people who call us every year saying, oh, my God, my 3-year-old cat just dropped dead.
Oh, boy.
And we always kind of say, well, it probably had heart disease. Well, there is feline heart disease, and
right.
It could have been that, but it could have been heartworm as well.
Wow.
So what we're trying to educate our clients is that heartworm disease is out there in cats, and it is preventable by using a monthly preventative.
Same stuff as a dog would?
Well, similar. They do have heart guard for dogs and heart guard for cats. They also have some topical medications that not only treat heartworm but also prevent fleas and ticks and, and everything, and internal parasites. So if you're going to be using those products anyway to keep your cats from getting fleas and ticks and internal parasites, you might as well prevent them from getting heartworm.
Indeed. And so if your cat suddenly comes down with an asthma attack, it may be cause for even more concern than you think.
Correct. And unfortunately, there's no treatment for cat heartworm. Because again, if you kill the heartworms, you're going to probably kill the cat.
Hmm.
So prevention is the name of the game.
Ultrasound or something wouldn't
work? You can see them with ultrasound, and I guess they can actually surgically remove heartworms, but you know, that's pretty, that's tough.
And fairly pricey, one would imagine, as well.
Yes.
Our guest today on her maiden Vox Pop voyage, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital, and the number to call, 1-800-348-2551. To the phones we go. John in Kingston. John, you're on.
Yes, thanks for being there, Ray. Thank you, Dr. O'Loughlin. I hope I said that correctly.
You did.
Great. Two questions. Actually, if you could talk about dog nutrition, because I know that's very important, so there's dogs have a chance of being healthy physically as well as mentally. And also, what would be a harness or a training leash to be able to teach dogs obedience?
Okay, so dog nutrition. My feeling, and what I always tell my clients, is for most dogs, it probably doesn't really matter what you feed them as long as you're feeding them a name brand dog food. Unless your dog has a particular problem with intestinal issues or allergies, most dogs get by with your basic dog food that you can buy in the store.
Dry or meat?
Either or. That's really a personal choice for owners. Again, I try to stay away from the no-brand dog foods, you know, Walmart, Grand Union brand, you know, whatever, because those, they tend to buy, you know, whatever the cheapest food is, and they just put their label on it. If you buy a branded dog food and the higher quality ones like Iams or Hills or one of those type things, they tend to use the same ingredients every time. So when you're buying a bag of food, you're getting the same ingredients. The cheaper the food, the more likely they are to change their ingredients depending on the price of meat or, you know, add more fillers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, for most dogs, they're not that picky and they don't care. What I always say is find something that works for your dog and stick with it. They don't get bored. People make their dogs bored by giving them treats and, you know, adding table food and things like that.
Right.
I've had dogs for, you know, 10 years at a time that eat the same dog food day in and day out, and they happily chow down every day.
Okay.
So you don't need to be fiddling around with their nutrition. Just find something that works and stick with it.
Okay. What about the harness issue?
The harness, what I find works really well are the no-pull harnesses. So, like, there's one brand called Gentle Leader. They make a harness. They also make a nose lead that wraps around the dog's snout. Most dogs don't particularly like the nose lead as much as the harness. But with the no-pull harnesses, they are made so that when the dog pulls against you, it turns them off to the side and keeps them from pulling. And it gives you almost fingertip control of the dog.
Brilliant.
And most dogs find them very comfortable.
Okay. John, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. And we go back to the phones. It's Ann in Deerfield. You're on, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
It's actually Plainfield, but that's okay.
Oh, it says Deer. I apologize. Wherever you are, we welcome you.
Good. I have a question. I've had dogs all my life. I've never fed dogs bones, especially chicken bones. I heard they could splinter and go through their intestine. I just bought a puppy, and on my feeding instructions, it says feed raw chicken with the bones, a nice treat for bedtime, a small thigh or drumstick or a neck.
Yeah, I would disagree with that.
Okay.
You were right the first time.
Yeah,
Yeah, chicken bones can certainly splinter. I've never seen one puncture an intestine, but it certainly could. I have seen dogs have severe problems getting constipated with bones, where the bones just form almost like concrete. And I've also seen dogs break their teeth on bones.
Mm.
So I don't like to feed dogs bones of any kind. I used to give my own dog one of those big old knuckle bones, like an old cow leg bone. And then his canine teeth, his big fangs, turned purple.
Ooh.
And it turned out he had actually killed the inside of his teeth from chewing on the bones.
Yeah.
So I spoke to a veterinary dentist, and they said, bones are too hard for dogs. I know in the wild, the dogs chew on bones, but I'm sure dogs in the wild also break their teeth.
Right.
And they don't live long lives like our pets do. So I would stay away from bones.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
And thanks a lot for the call, wherever you are. Let's go to Mike in Albany. Mike.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I had a question for the doctor. I have a lab collie mix, and she seems to love to eat comforters on the bed. She doesn't eat the furniture. She doesn't eat anything else like that. And with her toys, she'll tear them up a little bit. But we've gone through, I bet you, 15 comforters. I was wondering if there's anything I can do. Or she's 3 years old, too, so we were waiting for her to grow out of it. And apparently it's not going to happen. So I was wondering if there's anything I can do to, because she sneaks up on the bed at night, and she does it while I've never caught her doing it. And, you know, every Sunday I got to look for the cheapest comforters I can find to replace them on my bed.
Yikes.
Is there anything, you know, because everyone in the house has a hole in it. Have you ever heard of anything like that or anything I can do?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, there are certainly dogs that have, you know, inclinations to chew certain things. You know, we have dogs that have sock fetishes where they'll eat the socks or underwear. And in your dog's case, obviously, it's something about the comforter.
Well, you know what? I tried different materials, too. Like, I've tried, you know, the foam kind. I've tried ones with cotton in them. Every time, different material. But it's still something about the presence of the bed or something. Is there like a spray or anything I can...
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if you just did blankets instead of a comforter to see if it is just something...
Oh, no, she ate the blankets.
She ate the blankets on the bed, too. Yeah, yeah, that's a tough one because you really need to catch her in the act and reprimand her when she's doing it. I mean, the only other thing you could do would be to, you know, somehow make it taste bad.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's what I was wondering. If there's like lemon or something I should spray on there?
What you generally need to do if you want to find something to turn your dog off of chewing on it is you have to do sort of a taste test with the dog. So take whatever you're thinking of dousing, you know, this with, and put a little taste of it on the dog's lips, on their gums.
Yeah.
And if they kind of go lick their lips and go yum, 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 that's not going to work.
Right.
And if they make that funny face where they peel their lips back and look disgusted, then you found something that is going to turn them off.
So, I mean, if it's lemon... You know, then you'll wake up lemony fresh, which is really nice. Let's take a short break here, and we'll be back with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital. You see how easy it is? You answer some questions about dogs eating blankets, and we just move on.
Support for WAMC comes from Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com. Springfield Museums, presenting Festival of Flowers, April 4th through 7th, over 40 floral interpretations of museum objects, and special guest Ruth Loasso, White House florist, springfieldmuseums.org. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, a private elementary school, offering full-day academic programs to kindergarten and first-grade students, stgeorgeschoolcpe.org. And Four Seasons Natural Food Store and Cafe, Saratoga Springs, New York. Locally owned and operated since 1988. Open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. FourSeasonsNaturalFoods.com.
Hey, we're back on Vox Pop. It's our Pets and Vets show. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital is here. And we spin the wheel and we go to Anita in Waterville. Anita, Waterville-eat? Where are you calling from, Anita? Hello? No? Yes? All right. We'll try something else here. Let's try line two. Marjorie and Saugerties, you're on.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I don't mean to be terribly controversial, but I must counter something that the vet had just told that person about bones. I feed raw food, and I have fed raw food for over 10 years, and I have never had an issue with raw bones. The bones that are so dangerous are the cooked bones. The reason that her dog's teeth, canine teeth, were discolored, and even Howie agrees with me, discolored and their roots were damaged is because of the knuckle bones. Dogs aren't meant to eat cooked bones, dried bones, but I just fed my dogs dinner. They got raw liver, and they got a chicken thigh. And I feed them that twice a day. And there are co-ops in our area where you, I'm not talking about the prepared raw food that you buy for lots of money, but there are groups that, like the one that I belong to, and
yeah.
I order 350 pounds of 5-pound tubes of raw ground beef, liver, and green tripe. And the price I pay is 75 cents a pound. We get them from slaughterhouses. And so the raw thing is one issue, and people should give that some good consideration. The other thing, if most people don't want to put their hands in raw green tripe, there are brands that are considerably better for dogs than not. And one of the top brands is Taste of the Wild. It uses no grains. The product is held together with potato or tapioca. You know, dogs weren't designed to eat grains. And basically, dog intestine, their intestinal tract, their digestive process is like wolves. They have not evolved away from that. They have very short gut from their, when they swallow to their stomach, and they have very short intestines after that.
Okay.
And so they can't absorb raw vegetables. Now, my treats for my dogs are baby carrots, and they love them, but they come out in chunks.
Oh, great.
And they don't absorb anything from that.
Marjorie, this is Dr. O'Loughlin.
Hi.
I know a lot of people love the raw food diet, and but I have to say it's not without controversy. And I for one, I'm not a raw food fan, just because it worries me that while there are some people who are dedicated and take the time to make sure that they are being prepared correctly, not everyone is that good. And I worry about dogs who don't get all of the nutrients that they need from their raw diet.
I understand that. And I can't, I add a vitamin product to it called Nupro, which is a powder which you can add water to, and it's a complete nutritional supplement just to cover, because they certainly can't get everything they need from raw meat and chicken bones.
Correct.
You know,
right.
Chicken. But, and most people don't want to deal with raw food, and raw food that you buy prepackaged, I didn't understand what you meant by prepared, because, you know, I open a package and put it on in their bowl, and that's the preparation. But they do have this other stuff that's raw and prepared, but that's just amazingly expensive.
Yeah. Hey, Marjorie, we got to take another call here, but thank you very
much. You bet.
Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Elizabeth in Rexford. Elizabeth, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm calling as I'm concerned about people cleaning their dogs, and I'll tell you what happened. I had a dog, a Labrador, who had a grime in her ear for many years, and I cleaned it with the Zymox and you know, very frequently, but it was a really chronic problem. And then finally my doctor said, okay, let's do surgery and see, you know, what's happening. And it turned out that the grime had gone all the way, had made the turn, the L turn in the ear canal, and had busted her tympanic membrane, and dirt was all in the bone.
Yeesh.
Yes.
Yeek is yeek. And I have always felt very badly about that because, you know, I cleaned her ears, didn't stick my ear in, like, you know, way far, and you can't, of course, make the L turn. But I'm concerned that owners that are cleaning their dogs are pushing the grime, perhaps in some ways, back down into that L canal and kind of slowly build, particularly dogs with significant ear issues, further down into that canal and having that happen.
Well,
and I wondered if the doctor had any ideas about that.
Yes, well, certainly, you know, unfortunately, chronic ear problems are a big issue with a lot of dogs, and it's almost always related to allergies. So unfortunately, your Labrador that had the chronic ear issues most likely had some form of allergy. And so unless you can get the allergy completely under control, your dog's going to have ear issues. Now,
the other ear was fine, by the
way. Yes, and unfortunately, for some reason, it often is one-sided. You would think if it was allergies, it would affect, you know, both ears.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it often, one ear will be perfect and the other ear will be a mess.
Right.
And who knows why that is. But when you're cleaning dog ears, as you realize it, there is an L shape to the dog's ear. So you really can't poke a hole in their eardrum like you could poke a hole in your eardrum.
Yeah, but the mass of stuff.
Well, certainly, yes. Over time, chronic infection can eat away at the eardrum or the tympanic membrane, as you correctly called it, and cause it to rupture. And then you can get a middle ear infection. But I doubt, unfortunately, well, thankfully, most times I don't think it's from the people cleaning the ears. I think it's more likely from the infection not being well controlled.
Okay.
So I think you're better off cleaning the ear than not cleaning it. But also, if you're having chronic ear issues, you know, obviously you need to work with your vet to try and get to the base of it.
All right.
By the way, I'd also can quickly share with viewers that she showed no symptoms. You could move her ear around. You could whack the side of her head.
Yep.
You know, you could do anything, and she did not show any pain. And she must have been in quite discomfort having no eardrum.
Yes, unfortunately, that's typical for Labradors as well.
Mm.
And that's what she is.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Rod in East Nassau. Rod, you're on.
Hi. I have a 12-year-old poodle, and about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, he was diagnosed with cataracts. And at the time, I really didn't want to subject him to that, to the operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of had a change of mind, but I just want to know, is it probably too far gone for me to go ahead and have the operation now that it's been a good 2.5, 3 years?
Oh, no, no. You know, when dogs have cataracts, is the dog a diabetic or did they just develop for other reason?
I know that my mom... I inherited him from my mom, and she was her mental facilities were vanishing, and we found out that she had been feeding him lots of chocolate and lots of human food. So I don't know if he developed diabetes from that.
Okay, but he's not currently being treated.
Not currently being treated.
Okay,
you know, he's adjusted very well to his. To his blindness, but I'd love to give him the gift of sight.
You bet. So, you know, I would say it's not that it's never too late to treat cataracts, but what the ophthalmologist will almost always do before they do cataract surgery is they will test the dog's retinas. The retina is the nervous part of the eye in the back of the eye that actually receives the light images.
Right.
Because if their retina is not working, then it makes no sense to take the cataracts out because they're still not going to be able to see.
Yeah.
So they do a test where they can check the transmission of the nervous function of the eye, and if that's working, then there's no reason not to take the cataracts out. And it doesn't really matter how long the cataracts have been there because they basically remove that cataract tissue. They break it up and dissolve it and basically suck it out of the eye, and then you can either have a fake lens put in or no lens put in.
Okay.
The dogs really, I mean, they always used to joke when we were in school, they only need the lens to read the New York Times. Most dogs aren't doing that, so.
Very, very good.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Rod. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest. The number to call is 1-800- 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Alice in Wells, you're on. Hello.
Hello.
You're on.
Great. My question is about cats. I have a healthy male that found us about 5.5 years ago, at which point, when no one stepped forward to claim him, we took him to the vet. I had him neutered. My neighbor has been collecting strays and not neutering them. And so she has a male, at least one male, that comes to our yard, and he marks in the doorways, on my bags of pellets for the stove, pretty much everywhere. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to discourage it so that my entries don't all smell like cat urine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, the neutered male, he's just, you know, doing what comes naturally. Does your cat go outdoors?
He does. He came to us from outside, and I, much as I'd love to just keep him as an indoor cat, he's not having any part of that.
Okay.
So.
Because, you know, I was going to say if there's some way you could sort of booby trap your yard to make it not palatable to the cat. One thing you could try, and I don't know how well this will work for a tomcat,
mm-hmm.
Is you could try some feel-away spray.
Okay.
Have you heard of that product?
I have heard about it from other vets on this program.
Yeah,
actually.
Feel-away is a, it's called a pheromone spray. It's basically the happy scent pouch smell that cats, when they rub against you, are rubbing on you.
Mm.
And the idea is that if you spray feel-away, they're more likely to want to rub up against the doorway or your wood pile or whatever, than to spray. It's a little tough when it's a tomcat because they just love to spray tomcat spray. That's just
right.
The way they're made with their testosterone.
Right.
So I guess the best thing, too, would be to maybe talk to your neighbor about getting them neutered.
That's a good plan.
That would be a fine plan. They are breeding and having kittens.
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly programs in the area that will help people that are, you know, low income or have stray cats.
Mm-hmm.
And she could potentially talk to them
yeah.
and see about getting him taken care of. That would be the ideal thing.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I can certainly give it a try, but I know
okay.
she doesn't feel, I don't think she feels it's within her capabilities to deal with that.
Oh, boy.
But it's certainly worth a try.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Alice, thanks a lot for the call. And let's go over to Teresa in Hurley. Teresa, you're on.
Hi. I have a 7-month-old pit mastiff, and he's a pretty big boy already. He weighs between 60 and 70 pounds. And I've noticed that I buy him really good dog food, dry dog food, because I noticed that when I mix wet dog food with the dry dog food, it gives him severe diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that the good dry dog food that I'm buying him, he's not eating it. I mean, and it's going bad. It gets really stale, and I end up having to throw out this dog food. So my question is, do you recommend any kind of dog food for him, especially because he's going to be such a big, you know, a big dog?
And you said he's how old, 7 months?
He's 7 months, yes.
Okay. Are you feeding him puppy food or is he on adult food?
He's on puppy food. I was told to give him puppy food. Puppy dry food, yes.
Okay. Now, is it puppy food, regular puppy food, or is it puppy food for large breed dogs?
To be honest with you, the first one I bought was just regular puppy food, and then the bag that I have now, they didn't have any more of the puppy food, so I just had to buy him regular dry dog food.
Okay. Okay. Because the whole idea with the large breed dogs and feeding puppy food is
mm-hmm.
The large breed puppy food is got less protein in it, so they actually grow slower. People used to think if they were going to be a big dog, you want to throw lots of protein at them because they have lots of
yeah.
growing to do. And they've actually found through research that if they grow too fast, it actually leads to more cases of hip dysplasia and elbow dysplasia.
Oh.
Yeah, I've read about that. Yeah,
right.
I've read about that.
So
okay.
So you could potentially at this point, even though he's only 7 months old, and as a large
mm-hmm.
dog, he's probably got at least another, you know, 4 to 5 months of growth in him. He
okay.
could go on adult food. And sometimes
okay.
The dogs just don't like puppy food as much as they like adult food.
Okay.
So, you know, I guess I would experiment a little bit and just try a couple of small bags of dog food until you find one that he likes, and then once you find one he likes, then stick with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I haven't found one yet. This is the third bag I've tried.
Yeah.
And it's really good dog food. It's expensive dog food, and it's kind of costing me because he's not eating it.
Yeah.
He'll eat it, you know, the first day, and then after that, he just is not interested.
Hmm. Yeah. But he's not having. Is he still having the diarrhea that he was having with the canned food?
No.
All right.
No.
All right.
Is there any kind of supplement I could give him? He is going to be a big dog, and I am trying to avoid the whole dysplasia. So.
Yeah, you don't want to be giving him supplements, because that, again, leads to the rapid growth. And as long as he's eating a decent quality dog food, he shouldn't need anything else.
Teresa, we got to take a break here, but thanks for calling. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. More with Pets and Vets coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Agway, Millerton, Chatham, Claverack, New York, and Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering pet supplies from bedding to flea and tick control, foods from Wellness, Blue Buffalo, Evo, Science Diet, Taste of the Wild, and Primal Raw Diet, agwayny.com. Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting the first Fifth Friday Dance Meetup at Unison, Lessons in Dancing with the Bernstein Bard Quartet, March 29th and 7:30, unisonarts.org. Reform Pilates Studio, Saratoga Springs, teaching Romanus Pilates, providing a fully equipped studio with Gratz apparatus, private and small group classes, reformyourbody.com. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain their traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest, and our producer, Patrick Dungis. Alan said yesterday the exalted producer.
I don't
producer.
Know what that meant, but that's fine. I'll take it.
I had no idea you were exalted, but welcome.
I didn't know either.
And nice to have you here.
Eileen on Facebook says, the dog eating comforters. I don't think she means comforters that eat dogs, but that's the way it's framed.
The dog eating comforters.
The dog eating comforters. Like dogs eating socks and shoes is showing how you are missed. You never see the dog doing these things when you're home. Dogs miss the people they live with very much, and doing these things make them feel better. They're also very insecure when you're gone. And Eileen, I must retort, because my dog only eats the comforter when we're in bed right before sleep, and haven't had to replace it yet.
No.
But in my research, I've found that there are two, and doctor, you can tell me if that there are two sources. There's one company that makes what they call the three dog night dog proof comforter.
I had not heard of that.
And then I've also seen Matalès is a finely woven cotton, very thick, fine woven cotton, is supposed to also be somewhat dog proof. And
interesting.
So that might be my next step.
Metallic chainmail might work as well.
Yeah, not very comfortable.
Well, you know, you could replace the comforter, replace the dog is another option.
Well, you know, with a 6-pound dog, I don't know if I'm going to get any better on the eating things scale. So.
All right. Well, you have anything more from the social media? Well, it's so nice to have you here in all your exalted glory.
Thank you,
Patrick Dungis, our producer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, doctor.
And back to the phones we go. It's Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, and we go to Matt in Rock Hill. Matt, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. So I have a question. I have a 4, almost 5-year-old pit bull mix, and he's got what I guess is a glandular problem. And I know that dogs have some type of glands in their rectal area that can have fluid buildup in them. And he has an issue where multiple times a week this gland has been leaking a lot of fluid. It's very heavily scented, like fish. It's getting all over my house. So I was wondering if there's anything I can do to sort of reduce the buildup of fluid in those glands and maybe help him out with that.
Okay, yes. So what you're describing is a very, very common problem in dogs. Dogs have these scent glands called anal glands or anal sacs. That are just inside the rectum. They used to be used for marking territory when dogs would have a bowel movement. They would squeeze this lovely fishy-smelling material out, and it would mark their territory. Well, they don't do that anymore. Now they pee on everything. But they still have these glands, and they do get stopped up sometimes, and they will leak when they're overly full. So you can try a couple of things. One is... You can take your dog to the vet and have them empty the anal glands. Sometimes that will relieve them for a while. But a home remedy you can try is when you're going to take the dog out for a walk and you know he's due to empty his bowels, you can do a warm compress under his tail prior to walking him. And sometimes that will sort of loosen up things and let him empty those glands. The problem is sometimes as the glands sit there and get full, the material in there starts to dehydrate and it gets pretty thick. And then the dogs are not going to be able to empty them and they need help. And sometimes I have shown people how to empty their own dog's anal glands at home. It's not a pleasant thing to do.
It's not a pleasant thing to hear about.
But unfortunately, it is a problem. Now, one quick question. Is your dog chubby?
No, he's about average weight.
Okay.
He's about average.
And he has normal stool quality, so he's not having soft or loose stools?
Yeah, it's normal quality. He goes infrequently, usually only once a day or every other.
Okay.
But he has heavy allergy problems. He gets shots every 2 weeks for allergies.
Okay. And certainly allergies will lead to anal gland problems because they often get irritation of their anal area with allergies, and that can cause swelling. And then, of course, it's harder for those glands to empty when the ducts are swollen. So if you can deal with the allergies and get them under control, you may be able to help with the anal glands as well.
Well, Matt, thanks a lot for bringing that topic to the table. Let's go to a Clark in Oneida. Clark, you're on.
Hi. I guess my question is referring to a person who called earlier. I feed my Irish wolfhounds what's called the BARF diet, bones and raw food.
Correct.
So they get chicken, and it was my understanding that chicken bones are more like cartilage until they're cooked. And my dogs haven't seemed to have any problems with digesting the raw chicken and the bones included. But I'm just wondering if, because I cook for my dog every day, twice a day, they get either raw chicken or baked chicken, they get hamburger meat, they get brown rice, they get vegetables, in addition to a dry dog food that I mix in with it. Are they missing something in their diet that I'm not giving to them when I do this?
Well, usually as long as they're getting, a decent quantity of commercial diet, that should get most of the vitamins and minerals that they need. I would say at least a third would be good. And then if you want to, top it with the vegetables and the meat, that's your prerogative. But if you're going to do a more heavily, raw diet with vegetables and then add a little bit of kibble, I would be sure you're giving them a good vitamin and mineral supplement along with it.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Clark, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Mary in Petersburg. Hi, Mary.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question. I have a 3-year-old golden retriever. His name's Ernie. And he has, since he's been probably about 3 months old, he's had terrible hot spots in the summer. And so I've had to go to multiple different vets to get him treated when they come about. And I've had everybody say it's the diet that he's eating, it's the bugs in the wilderness that I live in, or it's the water that he's swimming in. And I'm just wondering if you have any information on how I can kind of keep those at bay as the weather gets warmer.
So let me ask you a couple of questions, Mary. So these only happen in the summertime?
Yeah, usually. And the first time it happened, the vet said that when he was smaller, he would go and swim all day, and then he would come back and he would sleep. And under his ears, I guess it wasn't drying properly. And that's what the vet thought it was.
Okay.
And then he would start itching, and then it would just kind of be all downhill from there.
Right, right. Golden retrievers are very prone to getting hot spots, which, for those who don't know, are a moist infection of the skin. That come on very quickly.
And they really feel hot?
They're hot. They're red and they're hot.
Huh.
And they are very painful. So are these hot spots in various places on the dog, or are they always in the same general area?
Yeah, they're usually right under his ears, and then he gets them on his behind as well.
Okay.
So those are the two spots that usually break out.
Ears and rears, as we like to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, more than likely, the ears, certainly if he's swimming and he's getting water in his ears, that could certainly be causing irritation and making him scratch at the ears. But most likely he's got what we call seasonal allergies or atopy. And if we know that this is going to happen in the summertime, you can try and sort of nip it in the bud a little bit. And one thing is to put him onto a essential fatty acid supplement. There are a bunch of different commercial products out there. I'm sure your veterinarian has, you know, one or more that they can provide, or you can find them even in pet stores. And you can start them on that as soon as the weather gets warm and just keep doing it right through until there's a frost. And that helps the dog's skin to stay in the best health possible and to fight the allergies. The other thing you can do is during the summertime is to bathe the dog frequently. Bathing does two things. It washes the pollens off of the dog if they're allergic to pollen. And a lot of dogs that have summer allergies, they are pollen-related allergies. And it also soothes the dog's skin. And unless you're using some sort of a drying, you know, de-waxing shampoo, you're not going to dry the dog out, which is what most people are worried about. And then lastly, if the dog does get itchy, is antihistamines often will help. And I always tell people there's not one antihistamine that works. You have to keep trying all the different commercial antihistamines until you find the one that works for your dog. And your vet, again, can give you the dosages for your dog.
Would it be the same as, in other words, by weight as it is for children?
It's by weight, but the dog dosages are different than human dosages.
Okay. Mary, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin here. We're in the home stretch on Pets and Vets today. We go to Patrick and Troy. Hi, Patrick. You're on.
Hi. Thank you. We just lost a terrific cat to feline leukemia, and it seemed to follow just shortly after his neutering. Actually, I called a few weeks ago while he was still alive. We're wondering now, and maybe it's just for you know other people's benefit, would there have been a different or a better way to neuter this cat than a surgical procedure that may have, I don't know, disrupted hormones to the point where the feline leukemia took over and overcame him in short order, or is that not good reasoning?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your kitty. I've lost several cats in my life to feline leukemia, and it's not fun.
It'll be a while before we get over this.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and neutering often is a trigger just because it is a stressful event. But unfortunately, in a cat that was going to succumb to their feline leukemia, it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, well, we thought he had years, but it didn't
yeah,
came quickly.
Unfortunately not, and I've lost a couple of mine before they reached one year of age. And with leukemia, if it's going to get them, unfortunately, it usually does within the first couple of years.
Okay, so we shouldn't.
So don't beat yourself up.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear.
Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Laura. Hi, Laura, and you're in Franklin, New Jersey?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, you're on the show.
Hi. Yeah, I have a pit mix. His name's Rogers, and he's been sick on and off pretty much since we got him. We've had him about a year. We adopted him at a year old. He started throwing up again. It's been a pattern with him, and I brought him back into the vets. And the vet seemed to think it was some sort of pancreatitis. And she gave him a shot to stop him from throwing up. And today, and he hasn't been eating, and today he did throw up again. And it was like really, like it just looked like really old food. And so I'm bringing him back in. I was just wondering if there's anything, I want to go in informed. I was wondering if you had any idea of what type of tests they're going to perform or any of that.
Mm. Well, first, so he's 2 years old. And
yeah.
This have they done any blood tests on him yet? Has he been
about
tested?
About a month ago.
Okay.
Yeah, about a month ago they did, and they said his white count was high.
Okay.
Or a little high.
Okay. Do you know if they actually tested him for pancreatitis? There is a blood test for pancreatitis. It's called the CPL.
Okay, I'm not sure, but I can ask them today.
Okay.
So that wouldn't be standard.
Yeah, you can. Some offices will have a test right there that they can run in house, or they can certainly send it out to the lab and get results usually overnight. And that will give you an idea of whether it truly is pancreatitis. Unfortunately, vomiting is such a non-specific issue. There are 101 things that can make a dog throw up. And pancreatitis is certainly one of them and a common one.
Okay.
But, you know, and unfortunately, that said, the CPL test will tell you there are signs of pancreatitis, but dogs can also have pancreatitis because something else is going on. So it often takes a little bit of investigating to get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
You know, it could be food allergy. It could be a whole bunch of different things.
Okay.
Well, we had thought it was food allergy for a while, and we kept switching around his food because he was there was diarrhea at first.
Yeah.
And this is pretty much since we've gotten him. And yeah, so I've just been trying everything.
Yeah.
just wanted to get better.
Unfortunately, if you want to decide whether it's food allergy or not, and you can discuss this with your vet more thoroughly, but you really need to do a 2-month food trial, very strict food trial.
So nothing else but
a specific food, yes.
Yeah.
And you can you can talk to your vet about that when you see him.
Laura, thanks a lot
Good
for
luck.
Calling.
Thank you.
Bye now. Okay, let's go over to Dave in Waterville. Dave, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I understand you might have talked about this already. I was probably coming in from the car when you did. But I have two male cats, adults, that have been neutered and are kept indoors completely. They've never been out. The problem is with neighborhood cats that come to the front and back door and spray the house, the doors.
Yes.
Is there something that will offend these neighborhood cats? Maybe convince them it's better to go elsewhere? And is there something that will help eliminate the odor?
Yes, eliminating the odor. They do make products. They're mostly for in-house use, but I'm sure you could use them on outdoor things as well. You want to look for something that's an enzymatic cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And they will break down the odor of the cat urine.
Okay.
They come in sprays and also like shampoos and things. But I would look for a spray if you're going to use them outside.
Mm-hmm.
Since your cats don't go out, you could potentially do something in your yard to make it inhospitable to the other cats. They make motion detector water sprayers and these what they call scat mats, which are these little low electricity things that the cats step on and they get a little low grade shock.
Okay.
Or you can put out basically you can make a tower of soda cans. You make like a pyramid of soda cans, and the top one you tape up a couple of pennies or quarters inside of it, and so when the cat comes near it and it bumps into it and it falls over, makes a loud noise, it scares them.
Okay.
And then if they realize every time they come in your yard they get scared or something happens, they're not going to want to come in your yard anymore, hopefully.
Okay. I mean, what about a dog, right?
Or a dog.
No, two cats is fine.
Well, not for Dr. O'Loughlin, I'll tell you that.
True.
Well, Dave, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, and thanks very much.
Okay, now listen, we have Andy and Rensselaer. We got about 30 seconds for your question. Dr. O'Loughlin has about 30 to answer, and then we got to end the show. So go ahead. Andy, are you there?
Oh, yes, sorry.
Very briefly, okay?
I have a 1-year-old son, and I'm thinking about getting him a dog, and I was just wondering what kind of dog should I look for, or if I go to adopt one from a shelter, what kind of things can I look for?
Good question.
To get a good dog for a 1-year-old.
You want to get a dog that's going to be pretty placid, pretty reasonable. I would probably lean more towards the retriever breeds because they're so forgiving. Golden retrievers, Labradors. I mean, most of those type of dogs, although they may be high energy, you can often find ones that are not high energy, but they also are very forgiving of having their tails pulled and their ears pulled. And, you know, they kind of turn the other cheek.
So not a schnauzer, for instance.
Exactly. Terrier breeds, things like that. They're great dogs, but I probably would stay away from something like that.
Well, Andy, we're done, and thank you for calling. And Dr. O'Loughlin, did you have fun?
It was fun.
You know, it's never a dull moment on the Vox Pop. We appreciate you being here. Support comes from Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon and Boutique, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. On site at Mobile Pet Grooming since 2002. Washing, de-shedding, nail clipping, and more. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing bonded composites and air abrasion decay removal, which helps to eliminate needles and drills. PaduladDDS.com. Boyden and Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperron.com. And Washington County Tourism, featuring art venues with cabarets, musicals, dramas, concerts, galleries, workshops, and programs throughout Washington County, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Thanks to Dr. O'Loughlin again for joining us. Thank you for calling. And thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the phones. Zach handled the board. He's right over there. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Patrick Donjus, our exalted producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, we talk cars with Gordon Fricke. I guess it's time for a break. Stay tuned now for a news update.